This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929 ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But don't forget, especially on a day like today, where I assume a lot of you are inside, you can always stay up to date here with everything happening at Odyssey on the Odyssey app. And also, Odyssey Sports is giving you and three friends a chance for an epic fly away to Las Vegas. You can start the New Year's off right with the Slam Dunk in Las Vegas. All you have to do is just download the free Odyssey app, log in, and listen to 92.9 FM ESPN for a minimum of 1 hour each day for your daily entry. You and three friends will get round-trip airfare, five nights hotel stay at the Circa in Las Vegas, plus $5,000 spending cash for you and your three friends each, so a total of $20,000, $5,000 per person. It's for the ultimate viewing experience for one of the greatest weekends of the year, the opening of the NCAA tournament. So again, just download the Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen. Listen for an hour each day for your chance to win. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My co-host, as he is each and every Wednesday, finally got him back on the normal schedule. The host Fun and Games here in Memphis, the host of Writer Than Right Trivia Thursdays on the Jeff Calkins Show at 10:30 a.m. Also the host of 901 Wrestling, the website CerritoEntertainment.com, on Twitter, on X, at Cerrito. Kevin, good day, sir.
Good day. Everything's canceled. Everything's canceled, except these radio shows on 92.9 ESPN. It's always happening, and I'm happy to be here. But yeah, no trivia, no bingo tonight. We will play tomorrow morning, guaranteed, right here on the Jeff Calkins Show. So I hope you're ready, Jeffrey.
Yes, we will be back at 10:30 tomorrow. I believe we're also going to have Jim Gaffigan, Sebastian Maniscalco tickets as Woo! Well. So another great prize. Always our thanks to Cindy DeBartolaven of our fantastic promotions department. She does such a great job giving us a prize week in, week out. We've come a long way, Kevin, from the days of Jeff actively rooting against me. Now he just kind of subtly roots against me. But back when he had to go to the post office and mail autographed individual personalized copies of After the Jump, he would...
During a pandemic.
Yes, yeah. Truly. He would truly root against me because that was creating more work for him. But now, thanks to Cindy, we always have a great prize. So look forward to that 10:30 tomorrow for Writer Than Right Trivia. Let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. And of course, it's Wednesday, so we'll do a little buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. We'll start with some Grizzlies news, get into the Tigers. I did a little bit of research, maybe talk a little college football playoff. Then we'll do a segment that we've been doing recently. We decided to name it. Shout out to Kevin. We're calling it our TV timeout, in which we'll take a look at kind of sports on TV or sports on TV adjacent. We've had some, I guess, online speculation about Peyton Manning's appearance at SNL 50 that he, some seem to believe that he was offering self-serving advice to Travis Kelce. So Kevin and I both watched SNL 50. We'll discuss that. Also, is Netflix getting into the forget just the specialty NFL games. Is Netflix getting into NFL on Sundays? We'll talk about that. We'll get into the list. Kevin's got a fun story from the Memphis airport that he wants to discuss, some of the highlights. Also, turns out we bet a lot this year. I hope everybody was sitting down for that. So we'll discuss that. CJ Hurt going to join us. Always glad to have him. He's been a great addition. Thanks to Kevin and CJ every Wednesday for having him on the program. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But I say, let's fire it up. Let's do some buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. All right, Kevin, let's get right into it. Buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. The Memphis Grizzlies will not trade Ja Morant this offseason.
Oh, I buy that. I buy that. The story, oh my goodness, it's so hard to, what can we believe anymore, right? Like, after the Luka trade, it's definitely got anybody thinking that anything can happen in the National Basketball Association. And it's got people believing that Ja could be traded, of course, which is an easy thing for people outside this area to believe, because it's like, why does the NBA want Ja in Memphis? And of course, maybe they'll trade him next. The Luka trade only adds people's belief if they want to be delusional in that thought. But I know we have in the past hour got an official quote from the front office of the Memphis Grizzlies, which gives me the confidence not even to, like, even give any type of credence to any of the speculation and craziness out there, because this is a pretty strong statement from the Grizzlies front office.
Yep, this is according to Drew Hill, who got comment from Zach Kleiman on the, I don't even know whether to say it was a report, because I want to take up for Howard Beck here. Howard Beck was on the Ringer podcast. I believe, as Chris points out, I think Howard is the president of the Basketball Writers Association. Like, this is a pro's pro. So he's on the podcast, and as often happens, it's like, it's the ultimate 2025 example of how news emanates. You have professional reporter who is on a podcast, and he's asked, you know, what's something he consistently kept hearing that you're not reporting. He's like, he then revealed on the podcast, I'm constantly checking in with the executives around the trade deadline about, like, okay, what we saw, what we didn't see, what's next. And in the league, are you always on the lookout for who's the next wave of stars that are going to get dealt, right? Somebody out of the blue said, keep an eye on Ja this summer. I'm just saying, it's one of those things I'm just kind of keeping an eye on if they were to flame out early. So it's something that,
and I can see that. Yeah, right. It's the executive. The executives, I believe now, and you can't fault them at all, right? The Luka trade has made them believe I can trade for anybody. So I'm not surprised that the executives are out there talking or speculating or putting together their dream list of players they did not think they could trade for, that now that maybe they can.
Well, and also it's another one of those comments that is largely fueled by aggregation. This isn't reaction to a podcast. It's one of the aggregators that you'll see on Twitter that will take the quote and throw it out there as if it's a report, when in reality, he's kind of throwing around, all right, here's rumors that I've heard. He's not reporting it. He's not even giving it oxygen, but he's like, this is something that was repeated to me over and over. So in response to that, Drew Hill of the Daily Memphian got this quote, from Zach Kleiman. I should say quotation. My 8th grade English teacher who listens every day will tell me quote is a verb, quotation is the noun. I can't blame other executives, air quotes, for fantasizing about us trading Ja. But it's just that. Fantasy. We are not trading Ja. Continue to underestimate Ja, this team, and this city. And we will let our performance on the floor speak for itself. I'm not going to give this nonsense further oxygen and look forward to getting back to basketball. End quote. I always felt like the comment kind of was an offhand executive going, like, watch this space. And oftentimes, I don't, like, it's not as if, oh, the Grizzlies are shopping him around. But really what it is it's to your point that you just mentioned. if Luka can get traded, anybody can get traded. Now, what I would also say is I actually think what happened following the Luka trade makes it much less likely for that type of trade to happen again. Because you now have a situation where an executive makes an unpopular decision, does not get even remotely near the return, and you're losing your fan base by the second. So I can see where other executives would be like, even if you had, and I'm not saying Ja fits into this category, but even if you had the wild idea of, what if I trade Ja Morant? I think this makes you more gun-shy than even before. But further, I think this is the bigger deal. I think we need to recognize the reason why the Luka trade was so shocking is because I think it's entirely possible there's one of 30 GMs in the entire NBA that would have done it, and it was the one that did it.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And so, but I mean, again, I can't blame any of these other executives to be out there, because it does open up possibilities of anything can happen. Anything can happen. And will it happen the same way? No. Like that, this kind of like secretive, he wasn't even on the trading block type of trade is bananas. And if somebody's out there trying to duplicate that, I don't see that happening. But are players on teams that people, I think it's going to make executives and teams across the NBA just really think and not rule out possibilities and explore possibilities, like make them say no. I think a lot of times that just didn't happen. Like nobody is like, I think there's going to be more. Well, let's check on this. Let's see. Let's explore this further. Make the other team not necessarily no to a trade, but make them say, hey, no, we're not trading this guy. So I feel like we are in, at least for a certain amount of time, because you're not going to be doing your job properly. I want everybody running every NBA team, if they're running my team, to explore serious options. I don't want them to be delusional. But at the same time, right now, I do think everything's on the table until you find out it's not. And I think we just found out in the past hour for sure, Ja Morant is not going to be traded by the Memphis Grizzlies anytime soon. It's something, of course, everybody that's a Grizzlies fan wanted to believe. But at the same time, that the same could be said about the Dallas Mavericks fans and Luka. So until you have your GM come out and express that same sentiment in an emphatic way, there is still that possibility. So I'm very happy. I know Grizzlies fans relieved, even though you weren't nervous. But again, Dallas fans weren't nervous either about Luka until it happened. So
yeah,
you do kind of want.
Well, it's interesting that you bring it up like that, because I was as you were talking, it kind of got me thinking. So, spoiler alert for any of those that you haven't seen season one of Game of Thrones. There's the question of, is trading Luka the same as killing Ned Stark? Which is, if you kill Ned Stark, anyone can die. And you kind of set the tone in season one. I actually think it was more of like, it's more like killing off, maybe like killing off Han Solo in episode 7. It's like, you don't really, like, it's not really good writing, it's not bad writing, but, like, really the actor just was like, I'll do one movie and let's move on. But, like, it was really one person's choice that really didn't, like, help, hurt, nothing to the story. It's just, like, just kind of shocking for the sake of shocking.
It hurt the story, if we're going to get into Star Wars talk.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I'm sorry, like, I can never cheer for the guy who killed Han Solo. And then they wanted to go through these other movies trying to get me to cheer for the guy who killed Han Solo by the end of it.
That's the bigger problem with the sequel trilogy. Because initially it was supposed to be, Adam Driver's even talked about this. The initial thing is he was supposed to be very unsure of himself. And by the end, he was going to be extremely sure of himself. And then Adam Driver said, well, and then things changed. See The Last Jedi.
Okay. And that shows why in movies and in the NBA, you need
a plan.
You need to have a plan. You need to have a leader that you trust to complete the plan. And you should not replace that leader with somebody else who makes irrational decisions based off of whatever that ruins the future of the franchise. And the Star Wars franchise was ruined. So I can see some connections with that. Looking back, we're probably going to look, okay, Nico, he wasn't a great GM. Like that, that's probably the big story here. It was a terrible decision that wasn't thought out. It wasn't vetted. He didn't talk to enough people. It was a bad GM move is what we're probably going to look back at it. But right now, the current immediate reaction until we see it play out is the concern that, like, this is a guy who got traded, who nobody thought was going to get traded, got traded, and there was deals happening. So I do think there is somewhat of a level of concern until we get through this phase and see things kind of like settle back down. Looking back, long-term, 5 years from now, it's going to be, this was a terrible decision by a GM who does not have a job, or who has a job with the Lakers now, who used to work for the Mavericks. But it's right now, we're not through that. We're still living in the moment a little bit.
Well, I think that's kind of the larger point that I would make is, oftentimes, when something shocking happens, people will either decide this is going to be the new norm, or some people, myself, hand up, look at it and like, that was so dumb that I think you have to set it as an outlier. It's the classic, I need to see somebody else do this, because this would be the argument for it. Okay, you do have young player that the organization, like, let's paint it in the brush that they would like to paint it. Young player that's due a bunch of money coming up, and the organization is not happy with him. Let's make the move now rather than have to deal with the consequences later. And you could make the argument.
The big key in the Luka story is the fans were very happy with him, right? So the fans were very happy with him, and their postseason success so far with him has been better than 27 other teams, right? So like, I feel like it's the fans were happy, right? But anyway, that's an important part of the story, I think.
No,
because like, the Grizzlies fans are happy with Ja, and the Grizzlies fans are going to be happy with Ja. Now, if the front office wasn't happy, that doesn't matter. I think the fans being happy should be a huge consideration for any move by any front office. I mean, their fans are happy, and you didn't win the NBA championship, and they were very happy with the guy.
Yes, 100% agree. The thing, though, is I'm going to need somebody else to make the decision, because some people would say, well, this is like related to what we've seen with Joel Embiid, where you had a player that was injury prone, you end up giving him a bunch of money, you build around him, and you're unable to sustain it. Okay, well, I would point out there's a big difference between a 7-footer having lower body injuries that's had lower body injuries for much of his career, whatnot. Like, that's a convenient, well, what about this? Like, that's a classic whataboutism. But I'm going to need to see somebody else that's going to do something even remotely similar to where I buy into this. Because the other aspect of it is I think you kind of have to look at it, okay, who are the characters involved? So Nico Harrison, largely a Nike executive for much of his career. And he gets lured away from that business to come run a team. But that's not somebody that came up from an organization and was basically saying, like, this is my shot. This seems to be someone that's like, he seems to have the opinion, like, if I get fired, there's plenty of stuff I can go do. Whereas, even though Zach Kleiman is one executive of the year, whatnot, like, it's unclear to me if this didn't work for Zach, that Zach automatically gets another chance running another team. Now, I think the body of work would suggest if it ever did end, he should get one, but it's unknown. Like, and Zach is treating that as if I've got the greatest gig in the world. Whereas Nico's kind of treating it like it's a job. You know what I mean? Like, clock in, clock out. Like, this is my opinion. This is what I'm doing. By the way, you all thought I was crazy when I traded for Kyrie. Like, that's worked. Like, he's kind of viewing it like that, which I guess to a certain level, like, maybe there is some freedom in that it allows you to maybe divorce yourself from a business perspective. But the problem that the Grizzlies also have is, we've said it time and time again, the Grizzlies have never had anyone like Ja Morant, ever. We've had great players, and we've had guys that we love, but we've not had this caliber of star. The idea that they were just going to move off of him because they would have a first-round exit, it gets patently insane, because this is the other aspect that we're starting to see. What do you get back? Like, oh, you're getting a bunch of picks back. Well, the league isn't really valuing that. The odds are entirely possible, even with Ja missing games for injury. Whatever you get back is going to be a significant downgrade, and I do not think that that is a risk that the franchise is willing to take at all.
No, and I agree with it. It's there's a situation. So wait, Ja seems happy. Grizzlies
well,
fans
this is the
seem
other thing.
Happy.
Okay,
and that's
like I can't remember if it was last summer or the summer before because it all runs together now. But Ja fired his agent and hired Mike Miller. That is not the move that you make to say, get me out of Memphis. For instance, contrast this when Kalen DeBoer is at Washington. Quietly, he fires his agent and hires Jimmy Sexton. You know what Jimmy Sexton, when you hire Jimmy Sexton, you know what that move signals? I'm getting out of here.
You're getting out of there, yeah.
Like, Dan Mullen, once upon a time, when he was at Mississippi State, all of a sudden, I think he was with Urban's guy. I think it's Trace. I think it's the guy that runs the Bears into the ground. Trace Armstrong, maybe. He was, I believe, under that umbrella. All of a sudden, boop, he gets with Jimmy, head coach of the Gators, shortly thereafter. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, this hiring the NBA player from South Dakota, right? Mike's from South Dakota. He's from a Dakota.
He's from one of them, yeah.
He is from a Dakota, yeah. We got a 50-50 chance. I think he's from South Dakota, who played all over in his career, yet chose to live in Memphis and return to Memphis. That's not really the move that you make if you're saying, I'm trying to get out of here. It doesn't mean that it can't happen, but it's just like, you know what I'm saying? That's not the pattern. If you want to get out, you go to Clutch.
Right. But to compare it, so this has got to, I mean, you just, the comparison to Dallas is what you got to do. This is what, you know, but like Luka, by all means, publicly was happy in Dallas and the fans were happy with him. And there was something going on behind the scenes. So what we got today, what we just got in the past hour was confirmation from the Grizzlies front office that there is no problems behind the scenes that the front office has with these guys that you don't know about. We're moving forward like the fans want us to, like Ja wants us. Everything's moving forward. They're not going to have a Dallas situation happen. It was just confirmed. Not anybody was necessarily worried about it, but until you know for sure, don't know for sure. So we know.
Here's what this confirmed for me. Ja Morant's not getting traded until Ja Morant wants to get traded. And right. I kind of thought, by the way.
Or something else, something crazy has to happen, right? Like, there's not the conversation, you know, of, like, it's not going to Ja Morant if something happens in the playoffs this year. It's not. It's, unfortunately, it's going to maybe be pointed a little bit towards Taylor Jenkins, right?
I think you're right.
Nowhere, because this, you know.
I think that's the case. As I told Calkins, we do kind of have to see how it plays out. Like, if Ja, like, because let me paint the scenario for you.
And that's, but again, Jeffrey, we're predicting a bad case playoff. I think the playoffs, we have a strong possibility. We're so removed from it. But there's a great chance of a great playoff run. This team is positioned, honestly, they have not beaten any great teams during the regular season. But, like, they could do it in the playoffs, and they could go far. So, like, we're always talking about the worst case scenario for the Grizzlies, which is an elimination in the first round. That's the worst case scenario, right?
Yeah, I think like they're a two seed and you lose to the seven. Like that's kind of worst case scenario. But yeah, I'm with you. All right, buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. The Tigers should lock in a number seven seed. So the idea being, you're giving up the possibility of a six, a five, anything better than a seven, but you're also You're divorcing yourself from the 8-9 game.
Yeah, I don't want the 8-9 game. So I would probably take that right now, right? Looking at what's still to come. I would say, yeah, I'd buy it. I'd buy it. Lock in that 7. Lock in a 7. Lucky number 7.
So I think I would buy it too, and here's why. So I took a look at the last two tournaments where they've started to kind of seed it more similarly. Like, because you basically have everyone's looking at the same metrics, and so it's tournaments that were seeded very similarly. Largely, you have the same committee this year. It's likely to be seeded again the same. Best seeds that mid-majors got were Gonzaga, San Diego State, and St. Mary's last year. They got 5 seeds. When you take a look at it, net-wise, St. Mary's was the highest-ranked net team at 16. Gonzaga was at 17. San Diego State was at 20. So 16, 17, and 20. the Tigers are hanging out there in the mid-40s. Now, where it starts to get kind of annoying is you start looking at it and you realize the biggest difference is that Memphis's quad one and quad two stacks up well, if not better. The key difference, though, is Memphis has, at the time we're talking right now, they have three quad three losses. So that's what's like absolutely tanking their net ranking. So if you say that the five is the absolute ceiling, and I think maybe at this point, I think I might say the six is the ceiling, I think I'd rather have the seven. And here's why. I thought this was interesting. So Giannotto's got a story that's coming out in the USA Today here sometime. I don't know if it's this week. I don't know if it's next week. But he's working on kind of the whole the seeding process. He's speaking with the metric guys. It's going to be a really good story. I can't recommend it enough. But so while he and I were talking, it made me go and look, all right, like what is the – I kind of had the hypothesis that as we've gotten more and more metrically driven, I think what we're doing is we're doing a better job of getting 68 teams that belong in the field. Now, what I think hurts is that I don't think we're seeding them properly, but I think we're getting the right 68 teams in. And so I started looking back at the last, this dates back to the 2010 Final Fours. And I thought this was interesting. No shocker, one seeds make the Final Four 32.14% of the time. So that's 18 out of 56 Final Four teams. They're one seeds. I hope everybody was sitting down for that. 10 two seeds have made it. So when you total it up, that's 50% of all Final Four teams have been one or two seeds. This is where I thought it got interesting. 4-3 seeds, 6-4 seeds, 5-5 seeds. So the most of the 3-4-5 is actually the 4. 0-6 seeds, but 3-7 seeds have made it. And so I actually think it kind of makes sense when you think about it. If you're a 6, that means to make it to the Final Four, you beat your 11 seed, but then you got to play the 3 seed. Oh, by the way, congratulations, your victory after that. Then you got to play the 2 and likely play the 1. But there's this there's this weird reality of you play the 7-10 game, you get to knock out the 2 seed automatically, and then you're usually playing, like, you're now in this position where maybe the 3 gets upset, and so now you're playing, like, 11, or you're playing... you end up playing like the it's weird how the bracket works out to where you end up having to play usually one fewer of the top three seeds. And so I kind of think it's one of those things where it's like lock in the seven. And I also thought this was interesting. So I went and looked at the NCAA's historical performance of seeding from 1985 through last year's tournament. The 7 seed has won 139, like the 7 seed's 139 and 155. The 6 seed is 163 and 155. So while the 6 seed has an overall better rating, the 7 seed like has the opportunity to go much further in it. And so it's kind of like I'm banking on this. It's like give me the high end, give me the 7.
I like it. For a minute, I thought you were going like with the Royal Rumble idea of like number 27 has and number 28. Those usually win, so you want to draw the 27 or the 28. But you actually broke it down more. It's an easier path.
Right.
At the 7 to get to where you want to go, which is as far as to the Final Four. But I just want to pause for a minute. It's February 19th, and it is this season of Tiger basketball. Feels more normal than we've felt in a long time because I mean, we're talking about seeding. We're talking about seeding here. We got on February 19th, we're talking about seeding, not if we're going to make the tournaments, talking about what's the best seed. So that's exciting for me. My question for you, Jeffrey, though, so we're looking at this, and the Tigers obviously got snubbed out of high seeding over the weekend, but And there's a big debate still that, you know, John Martin will not give up on the fact that the Tigers need to get into a better conference, which I support him 100% on. But is it what's for the Tigers? When we look at this resume, the Tigers resume is either it's really full of a lot of great wins and some bad losses. Like, which one matters the most here at this point? Or the bad losses or the great wins impacting the Tigers seeding more, do you think?
So what I actually think is impacting seeding the most are the metrics. And so what I would say my answer to that is the bad losses are what are hurting, because that's bad losses are absolutely tanking them in their rating. And so you looked at, like, I looked at the profile. So let me take the 3-5 seeds from last season. So we'll start with Gonzaga, who was the 17th overall. In quad one, they were 4-7. They were 5-1 in quad two. So overall, that puts them at 9-8 in quads one and two, but they were 17-0 in quads 3-4. You look at San Diego State last year, 4-10 in quad one, 7-1 in quad two. So 11-11 total, 13-0 in quads 3-4. St. Mary's, I believe they did have one bad loss. No, they actually had two. Okay. So St. Mary's goes 5-4 in quad one, 3-2 in quad two, for 8-6 in quads 1-2, 5-2 in quad three, 12-0 in quad four. But that's also why they got the lowest of the five seeds. And to me, it's the fact that Memphis is sitting there with three. And then I think the other thing that's probably hurting Memphis, and this is really kind of beyond their control, it's a matter of the SEC and the Big Ten are getting so many teams in because how they've done out of conference. And so what it's done is kind of pushed everyone else back further because they have more teams that are higher up.
Right. Yeah. Just shout out to the SEC getting quite a few deserving teams in without having to change their rules with guaranteed
slots.
They're going to get in anyway. But, you know, as most like, you know, following Tiger basketball for the past 25 years in these downgraded conferences that they participated in, like, would it have mattered if, like, so Central Florida, right? Central Florida is not in the conference with the Tigers anymore. They're not a basketball powerhouse. Is like, would it have mattered if they're losing to Central Florida versus it just does, right? Like, you're losing to them because they're slightly better. It doesn't hurt you as much.
Yes. The biggest problem with the conference now is that if you look at it metrically, there are no opportunities to boost your resume. There are only opportunities to tank your resume. See Sunday.
Like, before, you'd play a mediocre Central Florida team, though. And I'm just throwing that. I don't even know how they're doing this year. But I just know historically, if you're Tiger fans, you never got excited for a Central Florida basketball game. And it wouldn't matter to you if you beat them. But if you lost to you, you'd be like, oh, the Tigers lost to Central Florida. But from the perspective of the metrics and the numbers, it's a slightly better than it's just gotten so awful in the conference that it's just beneath it all. Even though from my eyes, losing to Central Florida, same as losing to whoever they're losing to now. Who'd they lose to the other day? What was that?
UCF? The Tigers, they lost to Wichita State.
Yeah, they lost to Wichita State this version of Wichita State.
So here would be the key point that I would make on that. So if you take a look at the Big 12, which is only the Nets' third best conference, so it's not like we're talking the top of the league. UCF is 4-10 in league play, 13-12 overall, but they're 75th in the net. So that would mean if you went to UCF and lost that game, it's only a quad two loss. It's not that penalizing. Whereas you look at
is that helped for the fact that they're playing quality opponents now? So
yeah, no,
they
there's definitely
seem like they're better.
There's definitely something to you get credit for playing each other.
Right.
Like they're not
playing Wichita State this year. So
right, but also part of that is also, like, I want to be fair. You get credit for playing each other, but also the league will get credit for how they do out of conference. And like, while the Big 12 awesome, you know, out of conference, they still were solid out of conference. And so then you compare that with the American, which is ranked 11th in conference. There's only one game right now. So you have North Texas at 56th in the net. Every other team is 104th or worse. And so now you get into this situation where, even though we can acknowledge, like, the perfect example would be going to UAB, like a UAB home game is quad three, a UAB road game, let's see right now, would be, if they stay at 116, so at least maybe you could eke out quad two. Let's see, 135. So you could eke out a quad two, but like, really the key difference is, like, if you go and you have a loss to UCF, who's like the 13th team in the Big 12, if you go and you lose there, like, it's not tanking you. Whereas Memphis goes and loses at Wichita State, tough place to play, but they don't have the resume to boost it up. Like, you get penalized. And so in the end, I would say it's the bad losses that hurt them more than the good wins. Because, like, if you look at Memphis to those teams that I just said, Memphis is 10-2. That is hands down the best quad one and quad two of those two teams, of those three teams that we compared them to with last year. But the killer is nobody had more than two bad losses. They have three.
Right. It's like you're playing for the Tigers, you're playing a video game, and it's kind of the same game. But then at some point you get to, like, there's a lot of obstacles and things you could fall into on this video game. All the other big time schools get to warp kind of all the way to March. They get to warp to March. They don't have to fall through they don't have those bad losses in front of them. But the Tigers still have to somehow jump over these obstacles and get to the end, while everybody else is warping till March because they don't have the bad losses on the schedule to knock them down, down, and down, and down. And that's not everybody. Like, Gonzaga still has that opportunity, but they just are always somehow finding their way, but it's still not as bad, I guess, for Gonzaga. That's what we're in those schools similar.
All right, we'll get to the college football playoff changes, perhaps. We've got the SEC Big Ten meeting today happening in New Orleans, so we'll get you all the update on that when we get into the list. But when we come back, we got our TV timeout. Let's talk about whether or not Peyton Manning was actually offering bad advice to Travis Kelce. Also, is the NFL coming to Netflix for more than just Christmas Day? We'll talk about that next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The winners just keep on coming in Zen Sports VIP Players Club Sweepstakes. Another Tennessee exclusive grand prize winner has just been picked for the January Sweepstakes, and now Zen Sports is keeping up momentum by introducing its new VIP Players Courtside Club Sweepstakes for February. This month, one grand prize winner will win 2 VIP tickets to the Men's Basketball Conference Championship game in Nashville and a $10,000 bonus bet on any tournament game or an alternative cash prize of $10,000. You'll earn entries on every bet you place in February and every dollar you wager. Plus, you will earn 10 times the entries on all parlay bets. You don't want to miss out on this. And if you're not the grand prize winner, no sweat. You'll also have a shot to win one of 10 small prizes, which grant you 2 tickets to any men's regional basketball tournament game and a $1,000 bonus bet on the tournament or a $250 cash prize. That's not all. All new customers who sign up using code JEFFTN, J-E-F-F-T-N, you'll receive 500 bonus entries as well. So head on over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for a full list of rules, and you will earn a $100 no danger first wager on your first bet. Zen Sports, betting just got better. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. You must be 21 or older and located in Tennessee to bet. $5 minimum wager to qualify for entry. Terms and conditions apply. Full contest rules available at zensports.com/sweepstakes. No danger. First wager limited to +500 odds to qualify. Kevin Cerrito back joining me today here on Jeffrey Wright and Company. And both of us, I'd consider us SNL guys, right? I mean, even if we don't watch regularly, like you and I grew up watching SNL.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. And I've been watching it more actually because of Peacock. Peacock makes it easier, mm-hmm. right? For a while, it was like because of YouTube, I was just watching the clips, and now Peacock, which is confusing because I don't have the clips on Peacock. I think the clips are
organized
to somebody else.
So they do have certain clips, but they're like organized. They don't have every clip. Like they're organized kind of right. by decades. It's like best clips of the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, whatnot. But like it's not the full list. I don't know who they sold the rights to, but that checks out. The point being, you and I both watched SNL 50. I think though this is something.
And I watched the concert too.
So I did not really watch. We kind of tuned in. We tuned in late on. Was the concert Friday or Saturday? There was something Friday and something.
Friday was the concert, yeah.
Yeah, so we tuned in on Friday, and that's right. Saturday they re-aired the original opening night of Saturday Night Live,
which George Carlin, yeah.
We've got the movie on the dramatization on Netflix if you want to go watch that on Saturday night. But you alerted me to this because honestly, in real time, I did not think anything of this. Are there people out there saying that Peyton Manning was somehow being disingenuous towards Travis Kelce? Explain to me the whole debate, because I saw Peyton on the red carpet. Honestly, when he was asked about it, I just kind of like threw it away. And then Peyton had his little moment, his little stand-up moment during the Q&A with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. What's going on here? Because I think I have a theory of what's going on, but you try to explain it to me, and I'll see if that lines up with what I'm thinking.
Okay, well, I mean, Peyton, obviously, I think prior to his SNL appearance, was not considered as versatile beyond sports as we realized once he hosted that SNL. Once he hosted SNL, it was like, wow, this guy can do something else. And he got more commercial deals after that. And he was so impactful that he's on this SNL 50, whoever's attention and belief in his ability to be the athlete that hosts, he's the best, I would think, of the modern era of athletes hosting, at least has looked in part because I think it was a surprise in a lot of ways, because he was willing to take the jabs, make fun of himself, and he's such a guy that didn't seem like that prior, I think. The most recent athlete to host was a year ago. We had Travis Kelce host SNL. Was it a year or maybe 2 years ago? Sometime since.
After they won the Super Bowl last year, so roughly a year ago.
There has not been an athlete host since Travis Kelce. And Travis Kelce is, I mean, the crossover athlete of the current times. But
you're not counting Steph's had his own comedy series.
Yeah, I know, but like, does anybody watch that?
I don't even know. Has it aired?
That's
another Peacock exclusive.
I think it's a Peacock thing that played, and I was like, this doesn't look good. But as far as Travis Kelce definitely is the biggest current athlete celebrity.
Right? Yes, I guess though my question though with that is how much of that is Travis and how much of that is his girlfriend?
We don't. I mean, strategic or not strategic, it is. It's part of the equation, right? So we have to factor it in. But as far as SNL goes, so Peyton Manning is there. He makes a joke during the show that like never he shouldn't have retired. Don't retire. Don't retire. Don't retire. Which I think is actually bonkers. Like the Manning cast, like what he has been able to do is an outstanding post playing career here for Peyton Manning, and to get to do so much of it with his brother, that's pretty awesome. But he joked at that, but also on the red carpet. I mean, he's asked directly about Travis Kelce because, like, Travis Kelce's in this position. He is much younger by sports years than Peyton was when he retired, like about 4 years younger. But, of course, plays a totally different position in the NFL, which I don't think tight end lends to you as many years as
no.
Peyton retired at 39, right? And Kelce's 35. But anyway, so I don't know if it's much of a controversy, but he was asked about it on the red carpet by E! News, and it has been turned into some headlines that Peyton is advising Kelce to continue to play, which is on par with the message that Peyton said on the show. And how genuine that is, or I don't know, you know, who knows if it's real advice or if it's just all part of the show and he's just being asked about it, so he's got to say something. Does he even care if Travis Kelce retires or not? But I do feel like he is, if he does retire, Travis Kelce is going to have more time, and he is the football player that can do stuff that Peyton Manning gets asked to do. But again, that also hinges, as you said, on their relationship. So I don't know. But
is the premise this?
Yes.
The premise is people are interpreting Peyton as saying we're threatened by Travis's celebrity and therefore there's not enough space in this universe for both of them. So somehow he's bullying Travis into not entering the space that he currently is in. Is that the premise?
I don't, it could be. It could, because like it is the, there's limited options, because it's a not a typecast, but it kind of is. Like, there's a certain role that Peyton currently holds, and he proved it by being at SNL 50, as far as the former player who does, of course, a million commercials and does that comedy. There's the, who else fills that role? He is the guy. He does that role, right?
Yeah, I guess that this is
not necessarily.
So here's my theory.
It's not tied to sports television, like Charles Barkley, for instance. So, like, yes, Peyton does the Manning cast, but he also is very relevant in everyday pop culture still.
All right. So here's my theory on this, because I was unaware. Because honestly, I'm watching it. I thought they were just jokes, and I moved on. Like, I didn't think.
I think it was. I'm saying it probably just was.
But it seems like. This would be my theory. This is all from the Swifties. Possibly. And number one, they've just now started watching football, but they don't know what it's like to lose. And they're going through what we've all gone through, which is when you lose, you're miserable and you just start lashing out at everything. And so,
well, did the Swifties want him to retire?
I think they want him to retire because that's like more for her and Taylor, or him and Taylor. But also, this would be my point. I'm not seeing either Peyton or Travis struggling to find a camera and to get some commercial money. And further, I would also point this out. The Mannings don't do anything on accident. They're buttoned up. That's a professional operation. It's been a professional operation for longer than the Kelseys have been relevant. So, since longer than Taylor has been relevant. This idea that somehow Peyton would be threatened by Travis Kelce is patently insane to me. For one, Peyton owns his own production company. And so, Peyton's going to be able to go and do what he wants to do no matter what. Second, it's not as if Peyton has gone after, like, for instance, if Peyton Manning, when he retired, wanted to have the number one broadcaster spot, he could have had that. He chose not to do that. He chose to do it a very different way, and he waited to do that. So this idea that he's just like seeking the A of A list, that doesn't line up. This to me feels like an entirely manufactured thing by the Swifties trying to say, like, he's trying to invade our turf.
Well, do you think Peyton is genuine on the don't retire? No, you don't think any of that's in, because he said it on the red carpet, he said it on the show. Does he regret, you think, retiring a little bit earlier, even in comparison to what Tom Brady was able to do?
This would be my argument. I think it was just a joke, and honestly, I would imagine somebody wrote the joke for him. Like,
of course. I don't know, but the red carpet stuff is a little bit different.
Well, but I also think he had talking points. Like, I found it hard to believe that a lot of those red carpet questions were, like, for instance, when I invite a guest on, I don't exactly send a list of things that you know you're involved. They know what they're going to get asked. Like, that's highly structured interview subjects. But what I think is,
Peyton only hosted SNL one time. It's interesting when you go back and look at the list, because it feels like he was like a guy they would have invited back and he would have been back. And so if he wanted the spotlight, I'm pretty sure he would have been back on the show hosting back in 2007. It's been a long time since his impressive performance at season 32.
I guess that's kind of the other thing. It's like 50. I think I don't think it's coincidence that he was the athlete they featured. Like, I don't find that a coincidence. But I also would argue this. I don't know if like he was the best athlete to ever do it, but I think what happens is, and this we see this as SNL fans, he has clearly the most memorable sketch of all time, the playing flag football with the kids.
Right. He was able to poke fun at himself and what he does for a living in a way that crossed over, made sports fans interested in it. He lived up to his character of who he's supposed to be. Like, he's Peyton Manning. Like, I can't believe Peyton Manning is doing this. Of all people, Peyton Manning is doing this. This is hilarious. Very memorable. That was back then. LeBron has since hosted. Michael Phelps, not very memorable. His brother Eli back in 2012. And of course, as most recently as Travis Kelce, as we mentioned, and J.J. Watt a little bit before him back in 2020. But it's rare that the sports people come back, right? Barkley hosted three times. Some of it is was post, you know, real late, like as far as because of his TNT stardom, yeah. Not his basketball stardom. And The Rock, of course, is hosted a lot, but he's more of an actor.
I put wrestlers in a different category because they're
and The Rock's in another category from that, right?
Like he's in a different category even than Cena. Yeah. He's in a. Yeah. So to answer your question, I actually think probably the advice was sincere, and here's why I would say that.
Keep playing.
I think for him the answer is. If you retire too early, it has an impact on you in a way that you probably don't anticipate. And I think in the end, Peyton kind of got retired. Like it's the perfect storybook ending. He gets to win the Super Bowl, go off right in the sunset. But people do forget,
right.
He was benched for Brock Osweiler during that year. And so eventually the game kind of retired because physically, like, he couldn't throw the football anymore. And so I think the point that I would take from that is that Peyton's probably telling Travis, listen, the game will retire you whether you want to or not. If you still have the option, you're probably going to regret retiring if you think you could have still gone on. It's why we see guys hang on. And so this really stems from.
I mean, it's very logical advice, though. I mean, if we break this down and try to see, is there some truth into what Peyton is saying? Is because often people in sports, and we talk about, retire on top. That's really cool. But like, if you're debating whether or not you should retire, then you probably should keep playing if they want you to keep playing, because that means you're still able to go because you have that decision that you make it. But like at some point, your body is going to tell you you need to retire, and then it's a clearer decision. So if you're just trying to decide, like Travis Kelce, for instance, I'm like, should I retire so I should focus more on my Hollywood career or my relationship with Taylor Swift, or should I keep playing? And like, just keep playing, because if you're gonna, once you lose that, you lose it. So you're gonna know when it's time to retire. Maybe that's more of his. Of the message from Peyton.
Yeah, you're going to know when it's time to retire when the league tells you to retire.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.